most people don't even pose to ask themselves the question, am I following a SQL script here? Or is that really what I want to do? Why do you care about what this person thinks? Why? We should stop looking for our purpose. It's something that is preventing us from finding it.
Is happiness truly something we should chase? What an intro, huh? Anyway, today we have Dr. Anne-Laure LeCunf. Miss Anne-Laure is an award-winning neuroscientist and entrepreneur. She is the founder of Nest Labs, where her weekly newsletter is read by more than 100,000 curious minds. Her research at King's College London focuses on the psychology and neuroscience of lifelong learning, curiosity, and adaptability. Her upcoming book, Tiny Experiments, is a transformative guide for living a more experimental life, turning uncertainty into curiosity and carving a path for self-discovery. Previously, she worked at Google as an executive on digital health projects, and her work has been featured in Rolling Stone, Forbes, Financial Times, and Wired. So, do you ever feel like you're following a script for success that wasn't written by you? In this episode, we challenge the traditional life scripts that keep us stuck and explore how embracing uncertainty can lead to growth. Why aren't goal-obsessed people truly free? How does curiosity shape our trajectory? And what happens when we stop searching for purpose and start experimenting instead? We'll discuss simple ways to test new possibilities, overcome the fear of standing out, and reframe doubt as an opportunity. Tune in to learn how thinking like a scientist can help you break free from limiting beliefs and design a life that evolves with you. Like I say every single time, please help me welcome Dr. Anne-Laure. How to live freely in a goal-obsessed world. Why aren't goal-obsessed people truly free?
This is the first time this question has been asked to me exactly phrased in this way, and I really like the way you put it. I wrote this book for people like me, people who are very, very ambitious. Big dreams, they want to have a positive impact on the world. And because of that, they try to do things in the best way possible. And they try to be effective. One way that may seem effective to approach things is to copy and paste what other people have been doing. Recipes of success, right? So you look at all of those different scripts that other people have been following. How to be successful, how to live a meaningful life, how to have a positive impact. And you feel like, okay, I'm just going to do this exact same thing. And then not only am I going to be successful, but I'll be happy too. You follow all of the scripts. And then sometimes you fail. And you try again. Sometimes you succeed. But then something weird happens here. You realize like, oh, happiness was not on the other side of that milestones that I created for myself based on another people's script of success. So I wrote this book for people who go through that cycle over and over again of chasing a definition of success that is not their own, of feeling like they're making their own choices, but they're not really, who are not truly free.
There's this quote that I fell in love with in your book that you included, which is, tell me if I've got it wrong, but life is a repeated cycle of getting lost and finding yourself again. What does that mean to you?
That means embracing the fact that we don't know where we're going, that uncertainty is actually part of what makes life interesting. And instead of trying to find the best solution in the quickest way possible, we should learn to be comfortable in those spaces of unknowing, those spaces of uncertainty, because this is where all the good stuff happens.
You know, I think back to my childhood, and it's funny because I feel like uncertainty is normally looked down upon, right? Even in my classroom when I was, let's say, in second grade, and my teacher goes, Rish, what's the answer to this? And I'm like, I haven't got a clue, right? But that teacher gives me a bit of stick for saying the words, I don't know. And I feel like I don't know is such a powerful phrase because it at least opens the doors towards learning and future knowledge. But maybe we live in a world where uncertainty isn't promoted in a good way.
Yeah. Think about what people are paid for. we're paid to provide answers. The more of an expert you're perceived to be, the higher your salary is going to be, in at least in most traditional corporations. Yes. When you're in a meeting with colleagues, we look around to see, hey, does anyone know the answer? We never really value people for how interesting the questions they ask are. We value them based on how effective the answers they provide are. And in the short term, that might seem, again, like the most logical thing to do. Give me answers, let's be productive, let's progress on this project. But long term, we're closing ourselves to so many opportunities for innovation, for imagining different paths, because we just go for the most obvious solution all the time.
So what's your advice to get away from that?
So this is what I talk about in the book. It's all about embracing an experimental mindset instead of a linear mindset. In a linear mindset, this is what we've just described, right? You try to get to a solution as quickly as possible. You're optimizing for efficiency. Whereas when you embrace an experimental mindset, it's all about exploring, about looking at different possibilities. It's about discovery. And it's also about accepting that you might get lost on the way to finding the best answer. And that's completely okay. Because when you look back, you want to feel like, oh, there was no way I could have imagined that that's where I would get, instead of having this full sense of clarity.
I follow your Instagram. And there's some cool tips on there. One of them I really liked was you added on to this quote and you said that the curiosity of our lives determine the trajectory of our lives. Is that right?
Yes. So this quote is based on, do you know Esther Perel?
That's where I saw the quote. Yeah.
Yes. So she has a very famous quote, which is the quality of our relationships determine the quality of our lives. Nice. And I kind of tweaked that and I said the focus of our curiosity determines the trajectory of our lives.
Where's the correlation between the curiosity part and the trajectory of our lives?
Because if you think about where you direct your curiosity, this is going to impact the projects that you explore. This is going to impact the decisions that you're making. This is going to impact the skills you acquire, the knowledge that you acquire. And all of that, all of these building blocks, this is what is going to impact the direction that you're taking in life. There are so many paths that you're not going to be able to explore because you can't even imagine that they are a possibility because you don't have the curiosity to look.
But then I wonder, right? Are you making the argument that we should step away from linear goals and focus on curiosity? That's the argument. How do we measure progress when it comes to curiosity? Like how can I, because I know with linear goals, even though it may stimulate fear when we're away from them, when we get to that goal, we can at least say, all right, I've come this far. I've achieved this goal. When we're curious and we're trying to experiment, how can I say I've come this far in terms of experimentation? Like how do you measure the progress?
Yeah, you need a different mental model. That's the problem, is that the mental model we have with linear goals looks more like a ladder, like a staircase.
Yeah.
So you feel like, I've done this thing, I've succeeded, now let's climb onto the next rung of the ladder. And you go up and up, right? And this is also why we keep on comparing ourselves to each other, because you can very clearly see where you are on which step of the staircase. And if you're lower, you feel like, oh, I'm late, right? Whereas when you have an experimental mindset, it's not a ladder, it's cycles. You go through cycles of growth. And the way it works is that you say, okay, I'm going to experiment with this. I'm going to explore this research question, this hypothesis. What might that look like if I try this way? You collect data. You look at this data, and whatever the outcome, you learn something from this data. You learn something about yourself. You learn something about the project. You learn a new skill. And you use that data to inform your next experiment. Mm-hmm. And so each cycle becomes a little bit more ambitious because you implement what you learned in the previous cycle. And I know this can feel a little bit uncomfortable because it doesn't have the very clear ladder that you climb, right? And my cycle, my next cycle, might not look like yours. So it also makes it harder to compare, where am I compared to you in terms of success. But that's also the beauty of it, is that everybody's going through their own cycles at their own pace without comparison with others.
What is success? Is that like subjective or objective?
Success is learning something new. That's the definition that scientists have. Yeah. If you learn anything new through any process, any experience, that is success. And that's it.
I had a family dinner the other day with just another family, and the family asked me, what are you doing right now in college? And I said, I'm a sports management major. And they're like, oh, how's that? I'm like, to be honest, I'm not that into it in the sense that I love sports, but to do a career in it, it's not that great. And they're like, oh, that's a shame. I'm like, I was thinking about it. I'm like, is it a shame though? Because 10 years down the line, I might've been kicking myself that, what if I never took that experiment with the sports management major, right? Like, I would have never known. So the biggest thing that I've got out of my major is that maybe it's not for me. And I feel like that is an answer that people typically overlook as a good answer. I think when we try something and it turns out that it's not our pursuit, people look at it as a negative, right? But maybe even the answer that we don't enjoy it or it's not for us, that's still a good enough answer to have.
Yeah, again, think about a scientist designing an experiment. What are they looking for? They're just looking for new information.
Yeah.
So if they run the experiment and they don't get the result that they expected, they don't go like, oh, such a shame, what a failure, I failed, I'm such a bad scientist, right? No, they look at the results and they go like, huh, that's unexpected.
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming. What can I learn from this? And how can I use that information to decide what my next steps are going to be?
Mm.
So this, even you asked me about the definition of success, right? But even when you start thinking like a scientist, your definition of failure is going to change as well.
So this mindset of thinking like a scientist, that's pretty cool. What other ways, how can we rewire our brain to think like a scientist?
It's really a practice that you have to build little by little. Our brains are wired to try and reduce uncertainty as quickly as possible, which is a really useful survival mechanism when you're in the jungle and there are lots of different animals that are trying to make you their next meal. But not so useful in today's society, which is changing all the time and where you need to keep on adapting and you need to be able to notice when things start changing, right? So really the first practice that you need to start developing is to observe your own reactions, observe your own decisions. I compare it to something like akin to being like an anthropologist, but okay, for your own life, right? Imagine you're an anthropologist that goes somewhere and starts studying a new culture. They don't know anything about that culture. So they go there with their little notepad and they ask questions like, why are people doing things this way? Why do they care about this? Why do they communicate in this way, right? And they take notes. By doing this with your own life, you can start noticing a lot of things that you're doing that you didn't know were actually driven by either habits or scripts or subconscious decisions, right? Why did you pick that major? Why are you studying this? Why are you hanging out with these people and not other people? Why do you care about what this person thinks? Why? All of these questions, right? And you can actually do this with either a little notebook or you just open your note-taking app and you start asking these questions. This is one of the first things you can do to start practicing being a scientist in your everyday life.
It's the act of being overly analytical over every small decision. It's finding out like where the true desire comes from.
Yes. And you can't do that all the time, obviously, because I really want to stress the fact that it's not that scripts are bad, right? A lot of scripts are helpful. So let me give you an example. You go to the dentist and you go and you sit in the waiting room. Imagine if the dentist comes and is like, open your mouth right now in front of everybody in the waiting room.
That's odd.
Yeah, that's odd. That's how you would feel, right?
Yeah,
like,
what
is going on here? That's because we all have this script that you go there, you wait in the waiting room, they're going to call your name, and then only you go to the doctor's office, and then you open your mouth, right?
Yeah.
Not before that. So this script is useful. We all know what you have to do. We have to do. We do it in the right order, and it makes the entire experience smoother, right? In the same way, every time you go to open a door, you don't stop asking yourself, why am I opening this door in this way? You just do it, right? So some scripts are good. Being the scientist of your own life is really about making sure that you're intentional about the scripts that are driving some of the bigger decisions that you're making. And that's why I recommend people, for maybe 24 hours or 48 hours, you do it in a very obsessed way where you start taking notes about everything.
Over everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
because it's a good way to have this very strong, intense practice for a couple of days. But after that, once you've built that muscle, it's really not about being overly analytical about every single thing in your life, but having this little switch in your mind where when you're about to make an important decision, what are the scripts here? Why am I behaving this way? What are the subconscious forces that are making me see this thing in this particular way?
When you do this with people, what are the typical reasons they have certain decisions to make? Like, for example, is it external validation? Is it just that because they've been doing it? Is it culturally? Like, what are the typical things you see?
I have identified three main scripts that people follow. The first one I call the sequel script. Mm-hmm. And this is where you do things because they align with the way you've been doing things so far. Yeah. So a very typical one that you'll find is when people finish university, they will only look at career prospects that align with what they've been studying because it needs to make sense. Huh. So if they've been, in your case, studying sport management, they might only look at jobs that align with this. Yeah. Because that makes sense, right? You spend all of these years studying in university for that thing. So that's what you should be doing afterwards, right?
Why would I go away from it?
Exactly. Yeah. And again, for lots of people, that's fine to do this. But most people don't even pose to ask themselves the question, am I following a sequel script here? Or is that really what I want to do? So that's one script, the sequel, where you follow this narrative. The second one is the crowd pleaser script. That's the one where you make decisions to make everybody around you happy. That could be your parents quite often. That could be a partner. And that could be in general just what you think is going to make everybody around you comfortable. With this script, this is why you see a lot of people wake up in their late 30s or a bit later and figure out all of a sudden, oh, maybe actually I didn't want to be a doctor, or maybe I didn't want to be a lawyer. And I just followed that script because everybody around me was cheering on for me and encouraging me, and everybody seemed so happy for me to do this. And the last one is the most insidious one because we all celebrate that script. Okay. And this one is the epic script. It's the idea that you need to do something big. You need to do something that has purpose, that has meaning, that has a positive impact. And because of that, a lot of people are looking for this meaningful thing that they can do, for that thing that is going to give them purpose. That seems okay to do, but the result is two things. First, a lot of people are miserable because they can't find it straight away. It's not that easy to find the thing that has purpose in your life. The second one is that they are actually making it harder for them to find that thing by being so obsessed with finding it.
What do you mean?
What I mean is that if you ask people who have found their thing, how did you find it? They will all tell you the same thing. I stumbled upon it. I just did a bunch of things. I was working on that thing. I met this person. I was working on this random project. And I was like, whoa, I love doing this. Yeah. That's what I'm going to keep on doing. Nobody tells you I had a 5-step plan and I systematically did this and I filled this worksheet and I found my purpose. Yeah. So that's what I mean by we should stop looking for our purpose. It's something that is preventing us from finding it. Instead, we should experiment, try new things, be open to different experiences, and just trust that at some point something's going to click.
What were the simple ways you started to experiment in your life when you obviously took a step away from Google after you wrote about it in your book? You can even speak about it now. It's awesome. But what are the simple ways you first started when you realized you're following the wrong script?
The way I've done it and the way I recommend anyone who's new to personal experimentation to do it is just to go back and think about your childhood. What were things that you were curious about at the time that somehow you haven't really been doing? And take that and turn it into a tiny experiment. So if you liked writing, for example, just say, hey, for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to write for 30 minutes every morning about whatever I want you to do. If you were curious about painting, you can experiment around that. If you were curious about sports, you can experiment around that. Just picking something and recreating that playground for yourself as an adult. In my case, that's what I did with writing. I always loved writing. And so I experimented with starting a newsletter, which now has become this really big thing that is so central to my life, right? But I had no idea when I wrote the first newsletter and started experimenting with this that that would be the case. And similarly, I have experiments where I learned that that thing was not for me. I did an experiment where I decided to start publishing YouTube videos every week, for example. And from an external standpoint, that went pretty well. The channel started growing. People told me they liked the videos. But every time I had to sit down and record those videos, I was dreading it.
Mm.
I really did not like sitting in front of a camera and talking to a camera. I like talking to people. I need to see the person's face and the reactions, right? So I stopped because even though from an external standpoint, this was successful, from an internal standpoint, it was not really making me any happier. And so that's another experiment with a different outcome.
First of all, I'm super sad to hear your channels. You're not on it anymore. I loved it personally. But the question I have is, it took you some time to figure that out. And I was talking to my friend Eric, who's sitting right here. But we were talking yesterday when we went to the gym. And he recently bought a workout plan from a trainer. And I was thinking to Eric, I'm like, if we got to, for example, a good physique, or Eric got to a good physique in 3 years, right? We started working out together because we just wanted to get fit. But now it's a big passion of ours. And there's certain things that I would love to do, but for example, even this podcast, I'm in episode 11 now. How long does it take? How long should an experiment take to realize whether it's the right one for you or not? Because I do feel like when you start any sort of activity, there is a bit of resistance towards it, just because, well, you're not the best at it, you're not good at it, and that may tear you down. So at what point do you go, well, this experiment is the one for me?
This is a very important question. And again, I'm going to go back to the scientific method to answer your question. The length of the experiment is not so important. The most important thing is to decide in advance how long you're going to conduct the experiment for before you make a decision. The reason why is because if you don't do that, you might just stop in the middle when it gets a little bit hard. You might feel like, oh, I don't know, like I don't have time, etc. What's very important about an experiment is to collect all of the data before you make the decision. So you decide the duration based on the nature of the project itself. If it's, for example, as I said, writing for 30 minutes every day, maybe 2 weeks is enough to start seeing whether you like it or not. If it's publish a monthly podcast, well, obviously 1 month is not enough, right?
Mm.
Maybe you commit to 1 year.
Yeah.
You say, okay, 12 months, 12 episodes, and then I can decide. So depending on the type of experiment, it's a more like rational kind of decision that you're making. You say, I think I would need that long to know if I like it or not, if it's successful or not for me personally. And then you stick to it.
Mm.
That's the part that's important, is the commitment to how long you're going to run the experiment for.
Even when there's resistance right in the middle. Because I think even when we start any activity, for example, when I recorded my first podcast, I was on a podcast high. Like, I just couldn't stop recording. And then, look, I love podcasting, but when I got to episode 7 or 8, there was times where I'm like, okay, it's a bit of a, you know, like a bit of resistance now. And that's why I think I was writing a blog alongside every episode, and I failed to set a goal, like an exact number of blogs I wanted to do. And by blog 4, I was out. Like, I was like, I can't do it. But I told myself, I want to get to episode 20, because that's a statistic I see online where if you get to episode 20, you're in the 1% of all starting podcasters. That's just like how the percentiles work out. And that motivation, like even on my wall in my room, I have a place where I put down a sticky note for every episode I get. And I've realized that I just stay more motivated with the podcast. I do think there is this level of commitment despite resistance, which you can achieve through setting the goal before you even start the activity.
And it's amazing what you're saying about the little stickers, because that's the power of running an experiment like this. When you say, I'm going to run this experiment for this number of trials, just like a scientist, and then you track it, is that becomes the outcome, whether you did it or not. Did I do it or not? Did I record the episode or not?
Yeah,
I recorded the episode. Good. That's
yes,
that's success. Yes or no, I did it.
Yeah.
I showed up. I recorded the episode. That's it. And then it's only at the end, after, in your case, 20 episodes, that you look back. And then you say, okay, based on my own definition of success, what did I learn? Do I want to keep going? Do I want to tweak the format? Do I want to record more episodes every month? Maybe fewer if that was too much work. Do I want to change the type of guests, etc.? You can do that. That's fine, right? But for the duration of the experiment, there's no cognitive load of figuring out, well, oh, I'm so loud, I don't know, it's hard. No, just show up, record the episodes, get to 20, and then you analyze the data.
And I also think the sad part that people don't realize when it comes to experimentation is it's unfortunately outside the norm. So when I was experimenting with this podcast, I recently went to an alumni event from a high school, and like I got there and everyone's like, oh, hidden mentality, like, yo, like, because it's just so off path, right? Like who's trying out with a podcast in college? Like, it's not a thing. And I think there is a sense of fear of not fitting in when you experiment, because the norm is everyone knows what they want to do. You have a certain script when it comes to college, you live it up. Then you have a major, you go take a job within that major. How can I get over the fear of not fitting in when experimenting?
You don't. It's part of it. It's part of it. And it's also actually a really good signal that you're not following a script, because that's the thing about scripts. That's why a lot of people follow them. They're reassuring. Yeah. It feels nice. It feels easy. It's the path of least resistance. Yeah. When you decide to let go of your cognitive scripts and to do your own thing, there is always going to be that lingering fear that you're not following the same path as everybody. You're not copy-pasting something. You don't know if it's going to work. You have to figure it out for yourself. And the one thing I would change is your relationship to that fear. Not trying to squash it, not trying to get rid of it, but seeing it as a signal, almost as a compass. I really like when I feel a little pang of anxiety in my stomach before doing something big, I literally say hello to it. I'm like, oh, hello, anxiety. Mm. Whew, we're about to do something big here. Okay, let's do it. And really see it as a friend, trying to protect you, trying to tell you, hey, are you sure about this? Like, this looks pretty scary. Yes, we're sure. That's what we want to do. We want to experiment with this and we're going to do it. And yes, it's a bit scary, but maybe it means it's worth it.
So giving into it rather than staying away from it.
Exactly. It's just a signal from your brain. It's trying to tell you that this thing you're about to do is something you've never done before. You don't know how to go about it. And again, if you were in the jungle, yeah, maybe better stay away, run the other way. But you're not in the jungle, so go for it.
Yeah, it's a privilege to have that feeling of uncertainty, and people look at it as a curse almost.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very good way to put it. It is a privilege. You get to do things that you've never done before. That does make for a more interesting life in the end.
I started this podcast as an exploration to figure out what fulfillment is for me, because I still don't know. And obviously having conversations with guests every week helps, but I don't know what fulfills me. And I'm scared that by the time I'm 80, like, I don't know whether I'm like, if I'm going to look back at 80 years of my life and go, did I live the life that I'd want to live, right? So do you think since you started experimenting, you've lived a more fulfilling life?
The question of how you'll feel when you're 80 and you look back is very interesting, because lots of people worry about this because they focus too much on their legacy. What did you leave behind, right? Yes. Which is very common. And that's interesting, because why should you care so much about something you're not going to be here to see? You'll literally be dead. When, you know, your legacy is what you leave behind. That's literally the definition of legacy, right? When you start experimenting more, you focus more on the experiences that you go through right now, in the moment. And in the book, I explained that this is called generativity versus legacy. What can you generate right now? What can you change right now? And what impact can you have right now with the people around you, in your community, in the world that you inhabit today, not the world that other people are going to inhabit when you're gone, right? That doesn't mean that you should not care about future generations, of course, right? But that should not be the main measure of happiness for you, that legacy that you're leaving behind. So to answer your question about how being more experimental has changed my life and my relationship to happiness, instead of chasing that idea that I have to have a big legacy and that I need to have a lot of people to remember me, which generally is going to have zero impact on my happiness, again, I'll be gone, right? Mm-hmm. I try to think about my life right now. And I have so many moments where I wake up and I look at my calendar and I'm like, wow, I'm going to have those two interesting conversations today. And then I get to travel to this place where I'm going to meet more interesting people. And then I get to sit down and write for 4 hours, and someone's going to pay me to do this. I get paid to read, research, and write. How cool is that? And I feel really excited. That's what I'm optimizing for, to have those kinds of days where I look at all of those different experiences and I'm almost in awe of how it is possible that I get to live this life.
Is happiness a perspective? Because here's why I brought up the 80 part. It's like, part of it is also like, by the time I'm 80, the legacy is a big part of it for me, but it's also, I get one life, let's say, like, obviously there's a lot of religions that speak about multiple lives, but let's just talk about Rishi Kurada, right? I get one life as Rishi Kurada. Have I done what I wanted to do with, if someone told me I had one life before going into this life and they said, what would you want to achieve? Have I done what I wanted to do? I think that's the part where I struggle to wrap my head around, because I don't know. I feel like happiness is a state. I journal a lot now, and I wrote a whole journal entry about happiness and whether we should chase happiness or fulfillment. And I was trying to be self-introspective, and I sort of came to a conclusion that I think I should chase fulfillment, because for me, I feel like happiness can be found in a lot of levels. I feel like you can either, even the conversation I'm having now, right? I can either look at this conversation as, oh, I don't get to spend 2 hours talking to you and be a bit sad, or I can be happy that I even get an hour with you, right? So is happiness truly something we should chase?
No, we really shouldn't chase it, and we make ourselves miserable chasing it. And this is really, again, about changing your perspective on it. We see happiness as a destination to get to.
Yeah.
Which is an illusion. There's no point somewhere or a place somewhere you need to get to where happiness is waiting for you. Happiness is an emergent process. It emerges from the sum of all of the experiences that you have on an everyday basis. And so to me, if you do want to chase happiness, if we want to keep that mindset of this is something you want in your life, because of course we want happiness in our lives. So I don't think it's helpful either to say, oh, just forget about happiness. We all want to be happy, sure. In order to build happiness, to have happiness emerge in your life, I think it should be more about optimizing your life to have as many of the experiences, those experiences that give you joy, have as many as possible of these in your life. And that can be exercising with your friend, that can be writing, that can be researching for a podcast, that can be having an amazing coffee conversation with a friend where you look at the time and you just didn't see where it was going. That can be traveling to different places, that can be learning something new, practicing something really hard, a skill that you have no idea how to do, and finding joy in this. If those are the things that you chase, quote unquote, then happiness is naturally going to emerge from all of these experiences.
And to discover these joyous experiences, experimentation is a necessary vehicle we have to step on.
Yes, because those sources of joy are going to be different for you than they're going to be for me. Also, we change. So something that gives you joy right now might not give you joy in 10 years, and that's okay. So that's why you need to keep on experimenting to figure out what are the things that bring me joy, and to find new ones as well.
There's this graph I remember in your book. It's the one with, I don't know if it's a graph, but it's the circle with ambition and the curiosity.
Yes.
Can you talk about that? What is the correlation between ambition and curiosity? Even defining them, let's start with, like, what makes an ambitious person actually ambitious? What makes a curious person actually curious?
Yeah. The reason why I drew this little visual in the book is because a lot of people, unfortunately, see ambition and curiosity on two ends of a spectrum. So you see ambition as the very focused, driven, eyes on the prize kind of mindset, right? And because of that, you're really looking at the specific destination you're trying to get to, and you work really hard to get there. And curiosity, on the other hand, as this more open-ended, exploratory playful approach, yeah. right? And so when you describe them in this way, it just feels like there's a tension here and you can either be one or the other. And that's what I question in that part of the book where I have this little visual. And what I explain is that actually you should see them more as two different axes, and so as a little cross, basically. And you can be high curiosity, low curiosity, high ambition, low ambition, right? Mm. If you're low ambition and low curiosity, then this is, you're cynical. You feel like there's no point trying to achieve anything of importance. And you're also not particularly curious to explore anything new. Cynical. We know those kind of people, and they're never really fun to be around because they tend to complain quite a bit mm-hmm. and they don't feel like anything is really exciting. If you're high curiosity but low ambition, then you are actually curious. You want to learn new things. You want to explore. You're pretty playful, right? But you don't feel like you want to work really hard towards something. You don't feel like that's something really important in your life. And I call this the escapist mindset. Yeah. And this is when you might want to travel quite a lot and you might read a lot of books for pleasure. And this is all great, right? But you're not necessarily going to direct any of that curiosity towards something bigger. If you're high ambition but low curiosity, I call this the perfectionist mindset. You want to succeed. You really want to succeed. And so you're going to do everything you can to succeed. But that means that you don't necessarily allow yourself to explore things that don't have a clear contribution to those ambitions. So you might only read books that are aligned with whatever project you're working on. You might only go on trips where this is, you're going to get something out of it that's going to be useful. You might even think of your friendships and relationships in a very transactional way where you ask, oh, what can I get out of this, right? And then finally, if you're both high curiosity and high ambition, this is what I call the experimental mindset. This is where you can both explore, ask questions, do things just for the pure pleasure of learning, but also direct that curiosity towards something bigger, something a little bit more focused, something that requires a little bit more hard work. You know when you're an experimentalist that it is possible to be highly curious and highly ambitious at the same time.
And it's funny, you brought the cynical mindset first, but, and you can correct me, but I think even a high ambition with low curiosity is just as dangerous, because I was writing about a different journal entry where Chris Williamson is a podcaster I highly admire, and he says that the world belongs to optimists because the cynics get to be right 99% of the time and the optimists get to be right 100% of the time. And I was wondering whether that really is true, because ambitious people, yes, they want to achieve a lot, but without the element of exploration, it's just a too high level for a bar of fulfillment, if that makes sense. You're never going to be there. And yes, maybe they achieve more than the typical person with a cynical mindset, but the bar of fulfillment is so high that they never even get to enjoy it, you know? So I feel like that curiosity element, to be honest, is probably the most important and what is lacking currently.
Yeah, absolutely. This is also something that we're not taught so much in school, right? We're taught how to decide on an end goal that we want to chase, and then how to get there, how to be productive, how to be as efficient as possible, right? But we're not really taught how to pose and just ask questions and explore and have intellectual fun. Those are not really things that are taught in school. And so that gives us a society where this pure ambition without the curiosity is highly valued, but where we don't necessarily encourage people to inject that curiosity to in the way they navigate the world.
Yeah, I went to do you know what Shen Yun is? It's a Chinese festival dance group. I'm sure Eric's laughing
about it. I've seen so many ads for this.
So luckily my family got the tickets to go. And at the interval of it, oh God, my mom's going to kill me by telling the story. Mom, I love you, I swear. But at the interval, like as a joke, I suggested to my parents, I was like, yo, like, not even as a joke, but just like as a playful question. I was like, what do you guys think about like me doing like a random acting course at the New York Film Academy this summer? And my dad was like, yeah, sure, like, why not, right? And my mom, albeit, like, she obviously loves me, she's a... I'm telling the story in a good light. So she was a bit skeptical right away. She was like, look, like, here's the thing. I'm happy with you to experiment, right? I'm backing you with the podcast. And she goes, why don't, instead of committing to an experiment you don't know that you'll be into right away, why not start with a week during the next semester? And if you like that, then we'll back you in the summer. It's just that we're scared that you may not, you're giving away a big sacrifice of the summer to just an experiment, a big one. Why not experiment slowly and increase that towards the summer? And I was like, fair enough. We had a little debacle over it, but, you know, we figured it out. And what I'm wondering is, how do I experiment in a way that I'm not, it's not a sacrifice, you know? Like, how can I experiment without it overtaking my life and potentially sacrificing other opportunities in my life?
Yeah. What's interesting is that I kind of like feel like your mom has a really good point here, because she was basically asking, what's a smaller version of the experiment?
Exactly.
And this is a question we should ask ourselves when we want to experiment, actually. I talk in the book about what I call the maximalist brain. And this is our tendency to always want to go for the biggest version of something, right? Because it looks more exciting. It also, in a way, it gives us the feeling that we're being more ambitious, that yes, we're going to make more progress. And so we always tend to go for the bigger version. That's why I call the book Tiny Experiments, because I want to encourage people to go for the smaller version of the experiment. So that's one part of the answer to your question. In order to make sure that we run experiments that don't necessarily force ourselves to sacrifice other areas of our lives, just asking yourself that question, what's a smaller version of this experiment, is a good place to start. And second, exploring that question of sacrifice is actually quite interesting, because if you're not willing to sacrifice at least a little bit of something else in your life in order to run that experiment, this is also an interesting signal that maybe that's not an experiment you should be exploring. If the curiosity is not high enough,
yes,
that you feel like, no, I don't want to sacrifice anything else in order to run this, maybe you want to run, because that's the problem too with experiments, is that sometimes you might want to run an experiment because you just heard a friend doing this thing and you feel like, oh, I'll do it too, right? But if comes the time to actually run it, and you're like, well, but I don't want to stop going to the gym on Tuesday, for example, or I don't want to sacrifice that other thing to do that, maybe you're not curious enough about the experiment. So that's a good signal too.
And that's okay.
And that's okay too. That's absolutely okay. It's, again, the idea of success here is to learn something new. If you can learn something new without even starting the experiment, that's amazing. You discover that actually that's not for you, that maybe it was a script that you were following or a copy paste from a friend, without even having to start the experiment, that's amazing.
But how can you actually be introspective that the experiment, like that experiment we're looking at, I'm not curious enough about? Because I'm going to be open here, and it's a bit funny, but when I was thinking about the course over the summer, I never thought actually about the course. I was just imagining myself like, you know, Rishi Kurata winning an Oscar. Like that's what I'm imagining. But like when I'm thinking of potentially holding a script and just training, I'm just like, I'm dreading that, you know? Like I'm always... Whenever I think of an experiment, I always just imagine the results and the glory I can get, like the epic script you talk about. Yes. So how do you review or analyze an experiment and whether your curiosity is liable towards that experiment?
Yeah, so that's really interesting, because you're falling prey to more of a linear goal of getting somewhere, right? While giving yourself the illusion that you're going to run an experiment. In those cases, I don't necessarily think that introspection is the right way to go about it. Okay. I would actually run a very tiny, tiny version of that experiment and see how you feel. Because we can also overthink it a lot when we project ourselves one vision with the Oscar in one hand, the other vision where it's just you in front of the script having to memorize the lines. And we can be stuck in this loop where we don't really know what to do next. That's where an experiment is very helpful, actually. You can stop overthinking it and say, that version that your mom mentioned, 2 weeks, for example, yes, go and do it. If after 2 weeks you keep on going back home in the evening at the end of the course and you're like, what am I doing? This is awful, yeah, right? done. The experiment is done. You collected the data, you learned something new, and you can move on.
What was the experiment you created for yourself when you were taking that shift from Google?
So the one that started the newsletter was 100 newsletters in 100 weekdays. And I said, I'm going to write these.
Sounds like a lot, though.
It was a lot, but I was not doing anything else at that time. So it was also a way to spend my days doing something interesting, which is, again, why I'm not prescriptive about the size of the experiment. It's really all about your current context. You just decide in advance. Mm. And so I decided in advance that's what I was going to do. And at the end of the experiment, I was really happy with both the external results, but also the internal results. I loved every morning waking up, making myself a cup of coffee, sitting down to read papers and write the newsletter. The reason why I went with something that big also was because I had prior data from knowing that I loved writing already. Mm. So this is also advice I give people working with me in terms of the size of the experiment. If it's something you've never done before, but you're curious about, go for something very, very small. Because you have no idea. Maybe you'll hate it.
Yeah.
If it's something where you know from prior experience that you actually like it, that you're highly curious about it, maybe you've done it in the past, but life got busy and you worked on something else, then you can go for something bigger because you know you like it already. And it's more about experimenting with the format, for example, or with a certain cadence for a publication, or you can experiment with different things. But you know, in my case, for example, that writing is something you love already.
Hold on. So you left Google to experiment?
No. Oh, yeah. I didn't tell the story correctly. I left Google to launch a startup.
Yeah.
And I thought at the time that I was being very experimental, but I didn't realize that I was following yet another script.
Explain that.
The script I was following is the script of you work at a big tech company, you leave, you raise money, and you start a startup.
Yeah.
And I thought it was being so original, but no, obviously not. And I realized that that wasn't for me for lots of different reasons. I didn't necessarily like working with a co-founder. And we were not very aligned in terms of our visions. I didn't necessarily like raising money and then having a bunch of investors that I had to report to. I didn't like the lifestyle in general. There were so many things that were not for me. And then I was completely lost because I didn't know what I should do next. And this is when I really started experimenting. Mm-hmm. Because for the first time in my life, I didn't have a very clear script to follow. That's what opened up the door for me to really start asking questions about what do I actually like? What am I actually curious about? Once you remove all of those expectations of success from society.
And you started with the smallest experiment, which was Nest Labs Now.
Yes. Yeah, that was my very first experiment. After my startup failed, I decided to go back to school to study neuroscience because that had been something I had always been curious about. And my first experiment was starting the newsletter as a way for me every week to consolidate what I was studying and also to make sure I understood what I was studying. Because having to explain to someone else what you learned is one of the best ways to make sure that you actually understand the material. You can't hide behind jargon. You can't pretend that you know when you have to explain it to someone who's never heard about that topic before. And so that's why I designed that experiment.
Believing the role you're in, that's still... And yes, you had prior data about writing, you still took a massive leap of faith. And I bring this up because what would you say to college students or even young adults in their 20s or even actually anyone, because I think it applies to anyone, who's doesn't have a clear sense of direction in their life and are... It's the classic when people ask, what do you want to do? And you literally go, well, I haven't got a clue, right? What would you say to them?
I want to first say that I think it was completely unnecessary that I just left my job at Google at the time. I could have started experimenting on the side.
Okay.
And I didn't know that at the time. So when people ask me now, I always tell them, no, you don't need to quit your job or you don't need to quit college in order to experiment. And in my case, it turned out to be okay. But looking back, I didn't have to do that. I didn't have to put myself in this very risky situation, especially financially. So I don't think you need to do that. You can experiment on this side. And so that's the advice I would give to anyone who's feeling a little bit lost about their next steps. What is an experiment that you can design and that you can run? And there are lots of different ways you can figure that out. I already mentioned just thinking back on your childhood. If you remove any expectations of success from society, if you remove all of the very understandable worries that we have about money, if we remove this need for status that we have, if we remove all of that, just strip it all down, remove it all, go back to how you liked spending your time as a child, when your parents were not watching, when you were alone in your living room, what did you like doing? And then take that and see if there's an experiment that you can run around that. I would start from this. And I'm not saying necessarily that this one thing is going to be your thing. The idea here is just to reconnect with that experimental mindset and to start being able to look around in your life and the way you navigate the world and find those little seeds of curiosity that you can turn into experiments.
Are linear goals still important then? Because, for example, you mentioned you want to do 100 in 100 weekdays. Does that count as a linear goal?
No, because the linear goal is when you focus on the outcome. Okay. A linear goal, for example, is I'm going to get 20,000 newsletter subscribers before the end of the year. An experimental goal is I'm going to publish one newsletter every week until the end of the year. And then we'll see what the result is.
What is the scientific or significant difference between those two?
So one focuses on the output, just showing up. Yeah. Did I do it or not? Did I write the newsletter or not? Yeah. Did I record the podcast or not? That's it. That's success. You showed up. You did the thing. The other one focuses on the outcome. I have that many podcast listeners. I have that many newsletter subscribers. I got that promotion at work. I got those things. Those are external milestones that you're either going to get or not get, but they are outside of your control. And that's the linear goal. And that's why we make ourselves miserable, because we chase that thing. And either we get it and we realize that actually we're not any happier, or we don't get it and we're miserable.
But is there any argument for linear goals to hold in our lives? Because even Nest Labs right now, right? It's amazing that you get to do what you love to do for a living. And it started out as an experiment. Is there, I guess, an argument that we should have a linear goal at one point, because that may motivate us to push even harder for that at certain steps?
No, I don't think so. I think if you're working on something that gives you intrinsic joy, why do you need extra motivation?
I guess because now the fact that you get to do it for a living, you're getting paid to do it, right? How do I make sure that I'm not escaping my responsibilities while experimenting? That, for example, the responsibility of, I know I'm 20, but even my father's responsibility, let's talk about my father's point of view, making sure that his family is taken care of, like he gets enough food on the table for your family, right? Sometimes when I feel like the thought of experimentation may not provide that right away, how can I make sure that we're not escaping the responsibilities that we have?
So that's why when we're talking about the idea of sacrifice earlier, I really think it doesn't mean you need to leave your day job until the experiment looks like it is something that can also support you. Mm. So within the experiment, you don't need a goal. You don't need a linear goal. That's what an experiment is. It's really all about breaking free from all of those goals we have in other areas of our lives, right? And yes, society is going to force you to have linear goals in other areas of your life. If you want to save up money to buy a house, for example, there's no way around it. That is just how our society is designed, right? But don't create more linear goals for yourself when there are enough, as is it is already, right? So for an experiment, you keep it purely experimental, all about showing up, all about your output, not about the outcome. And then just know and accept that, yes, absolutely, there are other areas of your life where there will be linear goals that are created by other people, that are created by society. And yes, you have to kind of follow these and get to these. But yeah, just don't do that to yourself in addition to these.
It makes sense. And then I'm thinking about my mother now when she brought the acting thing. I think she was also worried that if I did the acting thing randomly, I wouldn't be maximizing my experiment of podcast. Is there a rule that we can only experiment one at a time? Mm-hmm. Is that like a boundary that we should set? Because I'm thinking in my head, right, if I take on 5 experiments in a row, am I truly maximizing my commitment to each one of those and making it a effortful, worthwhile experiment?
So it's a bit meta, but it's worth experimenting with.
Okay.
In my case, I have found that 2 maximum, in my case,
yeah,
is what can work. If I have more than that, I end up being distracted or even a bit overwhelmed with having to keep track of everything I'm doing across different experiments. And I have found that actually 1 experiment is what works the best for me at a time, usually.
How big of an experiment?
Again, very contextual, because it really depends on what else is going on in my life. Yeah. So, for example, while I was completing my PhD, my experiments on the side of that were very small, very, very small. I did one experiment of 15 minutes of meditation every day for 15 days. Yeah. I did very tiny ones because I had this, getting a PhD is a linear goal, for example. I had this big linear goal on the side. I could not have too many experiments going on. I was always making sure I had at least 1 experiment running, but I kept them very, very small. And so it's really about yourself asking that question, again, being intentional and deciding, okay, based on my other constraints in life right now, based on my levels of energy, my time, my attention, how big the experiment should be, how many experiments can I run? Mm-hmm. And keeping an eye on how you're doing. If you feel like after a few weeks that's too much, it may be worth it to pause one of the experiments, park it for now, and say, okay, I'll just restart that one again in the future, just so I can make sure I can finish collecting the data for that other experiment that's more important to me.
So actually, maybe prioritizing as well is an important part of experimentation. And you used a phrase there, being intentional. Where does that pop in when you experiment?
The tool that I love using is called Plus Minus Next. And it's a tool I use as a mini weekly review. It has 3 columns. First column says plus, what went well.
Yeah.
Second column, minus, what didn't go as planned. And last column is just an arrow for what you want to focus on next. And this is a way to create little checkpoints with yourself where you ask yourself, okay, how is this experiment going? This is working, this is not working. And maybe next week I'm going to tweak that a little bit. So let's say, for example, that, well, actually, let me use a real example. I mentioned the meditation experiment that I did. So an example of plus minus next for this might be plus, I did manage to meditate and I was not too distracted today. And it actually felt pretty good. I felt really calm afterwards. Minus, no idea why my back started hurting right in the middle of this. And I don't know what's going on here. Am I getting old? I don't know. And next, you can say, for the next time I try it, I'm going to buy one of those cushions, for example.
Yeah.
And I'm going to see and compare.
Yeah.
Does that feel better? Yeah. Does my back feel better if I do this? And that's your next. And when you do the following week, plus minus next, same, plus minus next, what worked, what didn't, what I want to focus on next.
And what's a good sign that the experiment is going well?
That you're learning something new every week. That's it. That's really it. And that's why you'll notice, we talked earlier about the cycles rather than the ladders. Yeah. There's nothing here that communicates the idea of climbing something. It's just a cycle. Plus, minus, next. What is the next cycle going to look like? As long as every week there is something in each column, then it means you learn something new. And that you collected new data. And that means that this is going to feed into the next growth loop.
What's your next experiment?
I want to go back to experimenting with meditation this year. Last year, I did a couple of very small experiments. And I think there's something there. My curiosity is still quite high around it. And now that I'm done with the PhD, I have a little bit more time.
Yeah.
So I'm starting to think about what a more ambitious version of that experiment might look like.
What do you mean more ambitious version?
Maybe 30 minutes for 30 days instead of 15 for 15 days. Maybe going to a Vipassana retreat.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what that's going to look like. I haven't designed the experiment yet, but that's the next experiment I'm starting to think about right now.
Amazing. And I'm looking forward to see what other things you do. Obviously, your book releases March 4th of 2025. I've been asking all my guests this to end it off. What's the best advice you've ever received? Or even, I asked my last guest, what's the best lesson he's learned?
Ask for help when you need it. That's really the biggest thing I've learned in the past few years. I grew up being someone who thought that being successful meant doing it on your own. And I thought it was important to be able to claim that success as my own, something I did, just me, myself, and I. And now I've fully embraced the fact that there's nothing that interesting that you can do on your own. Most fun, interesting projects or impactful projects are things that are done collectively as part of a group. And so I'm a lot more comfortable nowadays whenever I stumble upon something where I'm a bit confused, I'm not sure how to approach it, to just reach out to other people who've done it before. So I would say that's my piece of advice plus something I've learned in the past few years, which is raise your hand and ask for help if you need it.
And that's the step away from the epic script, right?
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. So, then it off, tell me where, or tell the audience rather, where we can get the book. What's next for you?
So where to get the book, you can just look up Tiny Experiments anywhere books are sold. And in terms of what's next, just more experimenting.
Come on, let's go. Amazing. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.